Hello, welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. I'm Alice Arnold. I know we've had a little holiday while we recovered from the Olivier Awards, but we're back now with our new series and our first guest. Oh, she's a great one. It's Bonnie Langford. For this week's podcast, I'm in the studio with a British legend of the stage. I'm going to refer to her as... But you are. I am talking about Bonnie Langford, who started out her career as a babe in arms, literally, yeah, actually, 6 months old.
Yeah.
Won Opportunity Knocks when you were six. Mm-hmm. Many of us remember Opportunity Knocks.
Yep.
And then you went on to star in Just William. And then you went to Broadway as a child,
yep,
which I want to ask you about later, because that's fascinating.
Lovely, yes.
You've also, more recently, of course, starred in EastEnders and, of course, many, many, many roles in musical theatre. Your CV is so long it wouldn't fit in the studio, actually. If we rolled it out like it was on a loo roll
like
or something.
Yeah, like the puppy dogs, yeah, you know, with the loo
roll. It would go out of the door. But you're here to speak to us.
I'm a legend in my own lunchtime.
You are. You definitely are. You've had the most, most incredible career, but you're in the studio now with me to talk about the latest thing you're doing, which is 9 to 5, the musical.
Mm.
Now, you did this production before. This is on at the Savoy Theatre at the moment, but it started in 2012, I think it was.
It did, yes.
At the Manchester Opera House.
Yeah, it was on tour. It did quite an extensive UK tour, and I did it then, and I wasn't expecting to do it again, and I was in 42nd Street in London just recently at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane, and they were doing this again, and I became available, and I ended up doing it again because it was in London. And it's a fun show. It's funny that you say 9 to 5, the musical, because when I was interviewed when I did this before, when it started in Manchester, I went up to do an interview, and somebody said to me, "Oh, when, you know, what was your last 9 to 5 job?" And I suddenly, at that point, realised I'd actually never had a 9 to 5 job, which is terrible, actually. I said I'm completely unqualified to do this job. But you know, it just actually struck me. I have never done what one would call a proper job. It is a proper job.
It just means that you've never been resting, Bonnie.
Well, I've been lucky.
Yeah.
I have been very, very lucky.
Because lots of actors you could talk to who have indeed done 9 to 5 jobs,
yes,
when they haven't been,
yes,
resting.
Well, isn't it stupid that people say it's resting when you're not working?
Well,
it's actually the time you work the hardest,
yeah,
really. And we're all hustlers. We're all kind of working to the next job. And this is probably why I've just been so lucky that things have kept going for me. But I also, I keep working. I keep busy, sometimes too much. There are times when I probably should spend some time, quiet time. But I always feel that if there's something there put in front of me and I can't find a good enough reason not to do it, I end up doing it. And then I work out why.
I don't see you as someone who, you know, sticks their feet up on the sofa and watches daytime telly.
No, although lately I'm rather enjoying Escape to the Country. I have to say, I realise I have become one of those people. But yes, so I have, in fact, almost Escape to the Country. If I'm not doing anything else during the day and I'm just sort of at home doing what I have to do, I know that that's my cue to get ready. I need to go into work soon. So it's sort of my guilty pleasure before going to work. But yeah, I'm not really much of a potterer or a sitter around too much. And so 9 to 5, I did the tour in 2012, and it seemed that now seemed actually it sort of really has sort of found its place, because it's very much sort of following on from the whole Me Too campaign. They said hilariously that they were putting it in a period of the 80s. They were updating it to 1980, so that it's more period. And I'm like, oh, goodness me, I think I've still got clothes that were from the 1980s. But anyway, I think I'm the only one who does. No, Brian does as well. But, you know, so there is that
the others
thing.
Weren't born. The rest
no,
of the
others
girls
weren't even born.
Born.
No, it's just, it's some of it's quite hilarious how, you know, we have quite a young company and they really haven't got a clue about any of it, really. But it does sort of set it in its period. We've got a very good set that's using lots of computer screens and graphics at the back, which you know, is an innovative way of being able to sort of use technology as such. But really, it's found its feet, because it's very much about women in the workplace trying to sort of be heard and valued the same as men.
Well, there's a big talk about equal pay. Well, I mean, what have the arguments been recently about equal pay?
Absolutely.
And then you think, well, hang on a minute, this was written in the 80s, and now
was.
we've got We're 40 years on, and where have we got?
We're only able to talk about it more. That's probably it more. And it does happen, but it's, yes, we're not that much further down the line. But that's it. Jane Fonda, she actually commissioned the film to be written because she wanted to be able to get a women's message across and decided at that point that the best way to do it was through comedy. So I think what also appeals at this point is that the show is very much a comedy. It's just trying to be lighthearted. We don't talk about anything that's anything. We don't talk about anything except the fact that these women are in a workplace where they're not treated equally, and the boss, who is this male chauvinist, is behaving very badly and cooking the books, all sorts of things like that. And he deserves his comeuppance, and they make sure it happens. So it's a very simplistic way of getting a message across, and it's funny. It's just halfway through, it just turns to pure farce.
It's like a pantomime.
It really is. You just sort of go, okay, right, I'll go with this now. Yeah. And it's just a hilarious night out. And you know, I think people like the idea of just coming to the theatre and laughing. Everything, you know, sometimes it's just too serious, and we just have to just have a bit of a laugh and enjoy it. It's very colourful and loud. Dolly Parton's written. So the title song, 9 to 5, obviously is an absolute classic. We all know it. It's an earworm. We can't get out of our ears once we hear it. And Backwards Barbie, she actually did write before, and she recorded on an album before, because it's sort of about her. It's about her life. And that is sung by Dora Lee Rhodes, who is the character that Dolly played in the film. But other than that, all the songs have been written specifically for this show.
And your part in this... Now, you said they...
It's random.
Let's say they begged you to do it because they did beg you to do it because you were the only person who could possibly do what you do
happened?
And that's absolutely true. I couldn't think of anyone else who could do what you did when I saw it.
Or
I
would
just
want
thought,
to, actually.
Well, how would they ever find somebody else who could do what you do? Because you basically, you're the PA with your hair up in the bun and,
yes,
you know,
very upright. Very, very austere.
And then you're not...
No, well,
person.
She has this fantasy, you see. I play Roz Keith, who is the office administrator, or I think Mr. Hart's administrative assistant, I think I get described as. I'm not really quite sure what that is, because she very rarely goes in the office.
She doesn't do a lot of administrating.
She doesn't do much administrating. She walks around with a clipboard, and that's about it. Anyway, yes. But she has this fantasy that she is in love with Mr. Hart, the horrible boss, and the fantasy is that she thinks that he is in love with her, and that all the looks that he's giving her are subliminally telling her that he is in love with her. She is deluded. I think she goes home at 5 o'clock and talks to her cats. But apart from that, and so, you know, when...
But we do
when
play out the fantasy.
We play
on
out
stage.
The fantasy quite graphically.
The point
anyway.
of all this is that for somebody... I don't know how to put it.
Of a certain age.
All right.
Okay, do that.
So I say it like that.
I get that a lot. I get, you know, your age.
I'm a little bit older than you, but I can hardly get out of bed in the morning.
Well, I'm a bit like that.
And you are still doing more than the splits. I mean, the angle's bigger than that. Mm. And you are incredibly fit, incredibly sylph-like. I mean,
well, you look like
you've got the body of a 30-year-old.
Well, I don't know about that,
so
but I'm getting it all wrinkled. But I'm fine when I'm doing the show, but I do find that by the end of the week, last night I actually... I got an Uber home and I got out the Uber and I said to my daughter, I said, I bet they think I'm kind of drunk or something, because I get out and I go, oh, you know, and I kind of have to pull my leg, because I do seize up.
I'm sort of glad to hear it,
yeah,
because otherwise you would be superhuman.
I'm not. I am very much human, and I do actually, I've always danced all your life. I do my yoga, I do my Pilates if I can, and I do find that actually... That helps. The thing about doing this show is that the difficulty is that I don't do anything until, I mean, I sort of wander on, I do a couple of little scenes, and then I do this massive scene.
Yes.
And it's a bit like being Usain Bolt coming out of those starting blocks and just hitting a wall. That's what's hard, is the fact that sort of from nowhere. So I spend a lot of time in the first act in the wings, trying to sort of keep warm, get going, stretch, so that when I actually go on there... It's not too much of a shock.
Otherwise, you would do yourself an injury.
Yes.
If you went from no warm-up to...
Exactly.
And you can't warm up during the show because you're
I can't. So yeah, because suddenly I'm down in the splits going, ow.
Yeah. Talking of dance, as we know, you've danced all your life.
Yeah.
And you know, trained all your life for dancing. Was it about 10 years ago you did Dancing on Ice?
I did.
Have you been on the ice since?
No.
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 Okay.
No, that'll be no. No, I mean, I did I did Dancing on Ice, the very, very, very first series ever. So that was something like 2006 or 7, I think it was. And the great part about that was that I was actually the reserve. I wasn't in the main thing. So I didn't get all the sort of 3 month training. I used to pop along to the ice rink every now and again. And then sometimes people would come up and say, oh, who's your trainer? And I'd laugh because I go, well, I can't really tell you, because if I turn around and said Torvald and Dean, it just sounds silly. And so I just found the whole thing really silly. And I just would laugh. And I remember saying to one of my friends, came to watch me skating or the very, very beginning when I
Where's
sort of
your
thought,
nearest
I'll try.
Ice rink? Where was that?
Well,
at?
Then it was Guildford. So I went along and the person said to me, they said, well, it'd be highly entertaining because you look like Bambi on ice. I went, well... Because I couldn't do it. And I remember actually going along to my sort of, one of my first sessions, and John Barrowman was there because he was in it with me. And he was doing these sort of arabesques across the eyes and going, oh, like this, I'm fabulous. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I couldn't do that to save my life. And then the week before Christmas, and I was doing panto, they phoned me and they went, oh, you're in the show now. We go live on January the 6th. And I went, what? So it was a harsh catch up, because I then was doing two shows a day, but going to the in fact I was going to Slough at that point, Slough Ice Rink, at sort of 6 o'clock every morning, and then going on and doing the shows. But in a way, it was good because ignorance was bliss. I had no idea what I was meant to be doing, and in some respects, it was really liberating because I was able to turn around and say, I don't know how to do this, whereas. In my life, because I had always been in the business and always trained as a youngster, you didn't do that.
Mm.
Because it was, you know, you're professional. You say, oh, I can do it. Yes, I can do that. I can do that. And if I can't, I'll come find out. But you don't let people think you can't do something. You turn around, you know, I was of that generation where you always say you can do something. And then if you can't, go and learn. I was able to literally, I mean, I remember the first time they said to me, right, so we're standing on the edge of the rink. We want you to skate out to the middle and stop. And I literally turned around and went, I don't know how to do that. I can't even stand up on them. How do I do this? And of course, with dancing, it was so difficult because I would get nervous. And, you know, if dancers are taught to stretch their legs, pull their legs up straight, very, very tight, and point your toes. You try and do that on ice and you literally go timber. It's the absolute opposite. You know, you bend, your weight is at the back in your heels, you flex your feet, your toes mustn't touch the ice.
You can't really point the toe, because also if you pointed your toe, that funny bit would stop you, wouldn't it?
You're on your toe pick.
You can see how much I know about
ice
skating.
I
know there's a funny bit at the front of the skate that you dig in and it would make you stop and fall over.
Literally. I mean, I was sort of breaking the whole time. I just was like, break! And even with lifts, you know, people would say to me, oh, yeah, but you've done lifts. And I go, well, yes, I have done lifts. I love being lifted. I would say, just lift me. But even that wasn't the same, because when you're dancing, you don't have heavy boots on.
No.
So from having been a dancer where your head is the heaviest part and you adjust to that and you take off differently, you take off from a floor, not moving, suddenly you're a barbell because you've got a very heavy skates on one end of your body and your head on the other end of your body. So even that, the whole concept of it was completely different. So I did find it really hard, really hard.
Anyway, you've not kept it up, though.
No, I haven't kept it up because I did go back. Yeah, I went back to the lot for the very, very last series of there. And I think I decided, I think I'll just leave it at that. It's too dangerous. It's hard.
Now, going back even further into your past, because I have to ask you about this. When you were 10...
Yeah.
You went to Broadway.
I did, yeah.
To star in Gypsy with Angela Lansbury.
I did.
And who went with you? How did that work? What an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, it was extraordinary.
I mean,
it
that really is incredible.
Yeah, it was. It really was. I was in... The very, very first show I ever did was Gone with the Wind at Drury Lane, Theatre of Drury Lane. I was 7. And fortunately, it closed in time for me to audition for another show, which was Gypsy, which was coming up at the Piccadilly Theatre the following year. I say fortunately because I was on a 3-year option to go back. I mean, that's 7
aged,
years old.
I was going to say,
7.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was ridiculous. I was tied into this. I only did 2-3 shows a week and was paid £2.50 a performance. You know, it was one of those. But anyway... when I went in, I was put in Gypsy. I played Baby June opposite Angela Lansbury when it was at the Piccadilly Theatre. It was absolutely wonderful. I was only in the show for 6 weeks because of children's restrictions, which is why I was only doing three shows a week on Gone with the Wind. On Gypsy, they decided to do it differently, and they would have the kids do their whole run of 6 weeks, and then they would get another team in. So, you know, they still do it in a way. They'll have three teams of kids for shows these days. But you have to work with the limitations, and there were very strict regulations at that point, which have now changed. So I left after 6 weeks, was absolutely mortified, couldn't bear the fact that I was leaving because I loved it so much. And on that last night, the company manager and the producers called my parents into the office and said, would they consider me going to New York with the show in America on a tour when it goes the following year? And my parents literally thought they were being nice and was like, oh, isn't that lovely? How sweet. Thank you so much. Goodbye. And that was it. And they meant it. I'm going to cut a very, very long story short, which involved going to Bow Street Magistrates Court, and I was made a ward of court and all these things. And I went. My mum came with me. She'd never been past Bognor. She was totally homesick the entire time until we came back. And like, oh, I don't think I want to be back here. But anyway, we toured. I went to 13 different cities. But I absolutely adored it. I adored it. It had such a profound effect on me, I think. Not only the travelling, not only being with different people, because I was a very, very quiet child and all these kids were very gregarious. But also playing that role and also being in a company of extremely excellent people, led by Angela Lansbury, who is incredible both on stage and off. I was directed by Arthur Lawrence, who wrote Gypsy, who also wrote West Side Story, The Way We Were, so many other things. Stephen Sondheim, Julie Stein, all these people. And I remember it as well. It was at a time in my life where I was like a sponge. And I remembered it and it definitely had a profound effect on me. And I literally went for that year, and when the show closed, I came home. That was it.
Wow. Amazing. Mm. I can't imagine how exciting that would be for a 10-year-old. I mean,
it was.
It would just be the most, like a dream, really.
It was. But it was very serious as well. You know, we all had our sort of rehearsals and note sessions with everybody, with the whole company, and we were called the small adults. Mm-hmm. And were treated as such and expected to behave that way. We were not kids and children, you know, we were not separated. And we were expected to behave exactly in a professional manner. But, you know, very looked after in many respects. But it was tough. You know, I did 413 performances on the trot.
Yeah.
That's
10.
It. You don't miss it. Yeah. You don't miss. You didn't, you know, Angela was never off. I was never off. We never had any mics either. We didn't have any body mics, nothing.
Well, those
like that.
Were the days. No,
yeah.
I know.
70s.
Now, yeah. Much more recently, EastEnders.
Yeah.
What a hit you made of doing that one.
Thank you.
It
was great.
I don't watch EastEnders all the time, but I saw a fair amount of you doing it and properly good. But I mean, a lovely part to play.
Yes,
I mean meaty.
It's funny because it came completely out of the blue. I was actually at the Savoy Theatre, where I am now, doing Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And I remember they did a week on EastEnders of live episodes.
Yes, I remember that.
The partner of one of the actors in EastEnders was in the show with me and kept saying, oh, there's this week of live episodes, it's completely mad, they're all going insane. And so we were watching it avidly in between, you know, I'd run up to the dressing room and watch bits, go, oh, this is amazing. And I sort of knew the producer, Dominic Treadwell Collins. I'd never met him in person, but we'd sort of had, and I don't know whether that just triggered off a thought or whatever, but I got this call saying, would I pop in for this character who was very much actually sort of a Barbara Windsor type character. And I said, well, I'm not really that in many respects. But anyway, I went in and I read a couple of scenes, one of which was just hysterically funny, which was written by Darren Little, who writes a lot for Enders and does a lot of comedy. And he also was, at that time, was writing Towie. So it was very reflective of that and a very serious scene. And then I got, they asked me if I'd go and do 8 episodes, which ended up being 3.5 years. But I really enjoyed it. It was very, very different. It's an incredible machine. I was always in awe of how it works, because the amount of high quality material that they put out, you know, 2 hours a week they have to put out on TV in very, very short period of time. And the way everyone works is incredible. You know, it is incredible how they put it out.
So you left EastEnders.
Yes. In the back of the cab.
Crucially.
I got a cab to Dubai.
In the back of a cab. Crucially, therefore still alive, Bonnie.
I am still alive. As Carmel.
Yes, as Carmel. So is the door is presumably open that you could.
I guess so. Saw somebody the other day, I saw one of the writers, and he said, "Oh, you're on the end of the phone today." And I went, "Oh, am I?" Apparently. Because my son is still there. Apparently I'm on the end of the phone.
They should pay you for
so
that.
I said, "Oh, I'm on the end of the phone, am I?" Yes, apparently Kush is calling me to talk to me. So apparently, there you go. I'm in Dubai on a very long distance phone call. Yes, I mean you never know. You never ever know what's going on in those things. So,
but then we talked about 42nd Street, which happened after that, and now what you're doing 9 to 5. And I think the point is really, is that you were a child star. Everybody knew you were a child star, and an incredibly talented one that had trained as well. You know,
yes,
it wasn't I'm just a cute face.
No,
you know,
I didn't want to be famous. I liked the job.
Yeah, and that's
the craft.
Always been really, really clear. And I suppose maybe you've just answered my question, which is why actually very few people make the transition from the child star to the adult star. And now, I mean, especially with something like EastEnders, you've got a whole millions of people who wouldn't have known you as a child star at all, but know you as the person from EastEnders.
Yeah.
To a completely different fame. But, I mean, do you think there's a key other... Is it just that you trained and you're bloody good at what you did?
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, you know, I think I've been very, very lucky that opportunity has been there. And then also, yeah, I work hard. I do. I do try and do my job the best I can do. I always try and do the best I can do. And that seems to appeal. I don't know. It seems to have kept me going this long. I don't have the magic answer. I don't think there is one. I think it's different for everyone. I know that when I started, I loved the job. I didn't want to be famous. And I know it comes with it. And I appreciate that. And the thing I like is meeting people. I love meeting people, you know, particularly with the EastEnders thing. I feel very privileged that people come up to me and will pour their hearts out to me. And I think that is something I feel honoured to feel that people can come and talk to me. Mm. I can't answer the question. I can't help them. I'm not that person. But to think that they believe that. And one of the things that somebody said to me as well, you know, sometimes, as you say, you know, a lot of people don't know me because of they know me as EastEnders, and then their grandma will say, "Oh, I remember when she did Scream and Scream." My heart does sink a little bit, because I feel so mixed about that, because I loved doing Just William, and I played Violet Elizabeth Bott, and Diana Dawes was my mother, and it was like, I always called it the junior upstairs, downstairs, because it was the same team that put that on, and it was very British, old-fashioned period sort of comedy drama. And I always thought that the character I played was very funny. I always thought I played her sort of comedically. And it was almost a double-edged sword, because it was lovely that people believed that I was convincing, and also it was terrible that people believed I was convincing, because they thought that was me.
They thought you were really
And so
like
that was why I was just so awful. And the one thing that I would change now, the only thing I regretted ever, was the fact that Richmore Crompton in the Just William books wrote that Violet Elizabeth had short blonde curly hair, and I wish that I had had a wig and had short blonde curly hair that I could have taken off, and then my own hair, being red curly, would have been me and not that character, because I had red curly hair, and so I would walk around and people think that was me. So that's the only thing I kind of regret, was that I couldn't take her off and go, yes, I was playing that character, you know, whatever. But who knows, at the time, I wasn't thinking of it as this sort of long-term career. But I still like what I do. I still enjoy the craft of it. I still enjoy people enjoying it. I still enjoy that whole process. I still enjoy... And I'm so lucky to enjoy what I do of any job, you know, and that I get the variety, and you never know what's around the corner. Was very normal.
You've got a daughter.
I have a daughter.
Is she...
She's 18.
Yeah, 18.
She's 18.
18.
She's 18. How did she get to 18?
Okay. You've got a young woman at home.
I know.
Who is following in her mother's footsteps
she's making her own footsteps. Okay. You see, I always like to think she's making her own footprints, and as we all do. And I think, Yeah, you see, I didn't, although my family were all in the business, my great aunt was a dancer with Pavlova's company and things like that, it wasn't the same sort of fame game as it is now. It wasn't the same. I didn't have my family in a backpack on my back. Mm-hmm. And I do worry about that for her. I do say to her, you know, you don't feel you need to do it for anyone other than you. If you need to do this, then do it. If you don't need to do it, but you think I might as well, don't do it.
Don't do it, no.
Because it's too hard. Mm-hmm. The business is too cruel and too hard. You have to like it enough to put up with the horrible bits. And she, at the moment, seems to want to do it. She's doing a BTEC in musical theatre, and I'm learning a lot about stuff I never knew.
Well, listen, I see those arts ed kids when they're training, because they're up the road from me.
Yep.
By golly, they're good. They're so much better than anybody was when we were kids. We were like, what, you can sing, act and dance.
Yeah, well,
and you have to be able to do that.
See, we never had that, did we? I mean, we didn't have that. We didn't have courses. You didn't have BTECs in musical theatre.
No, I couldn't put one foot in front of the other.
We just did what we did, thought was right, and went to see shows and thought, well, I'll try and do that.
Now, I'm going to ask, I saw this thing on Twitter, and I thought, that makes more sense than most things on Twitter.
Right.
Which was Matthew Bourne suggesting, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? But you should so be the next judge on Strictly. You absolutely so should.
And so he should,
because you are absolutely perfectly qualified for
this. I love Strictly.
I've always loved it. So does he.
Yes, I know he does. We've actually been to it together.
Well, he's a big fan and he wants you to do it, and he's quite right.
Well, I might start
a petition.
Who knows? I think Strictly is a fabulous show, not only because of, you know, the dance element, but I love the fact that it's Saturday night telly, like they used to be, but done really well, that, you know, all the different departments are now expert in what they do.
Mm.
Hair, makeup, cameras, dance itself, but also all those sound, you know, the grams, there's music, there's live music on telly on a Saturday night with a fabulous live band. All those sorts of things that I think Strictly is so great about, and the competitive element, and you see people grow, you see people quiver. It's the vulnerability factor as well.
And it's not unkind, which is why I think people like it. I mean, all right, we have Craig doing his, you know,
of course,
being a bit mean to people, but it's not, in its essence, it is not an unkind show.
No.
And I think people like that.
Yeah, and they like to see people try to do something out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. We all favour somebody, don't we? We see them and we think, you know, no, they're not the best in the world, but boy, isn't it lovely to see them blossom.
Mm.
You see people blossom,
and you
don't
do
you?
Really,
literally.
And that's great when you see people really improve.
Yeah. And they start off saying, you know, oh, I'm not going to wear sequins, I'm not going to have a fake tan. And about week three, they've got that fake tan, they've got that sparkles on, and it's fun. But I have no idea. I love the show, but I'm not a ballroom person, so I would have to sort of...
But neither was Darcy Bustle.
Exactly.
She's a ballet person.
I have no idea which
And I think you have enough experience of the performance.
Who knows?
Anyway.
But I love the show anyway.
Right, two very quick questions now. Is there, I mean, as I said, your CV on its loo roll is running out of our studio, but is there any part that you haven't done that you'd like to do?
Oh, loads.
Still.
Loads. And I've never been able to say what, because I've never done that as a person. I've never turned around and said, I want to do this part by the time I'm so-and-so. I want to do this part, because I often think that whatever fate delivers is generally a better idea, because it's more challenging to me than I would have thought of myself. You tend to think of things that you think are in your comfort zone, and I think it's usually better to be thrown something that isn't.
Very good answer. I like that. Okay, you might say the same about my next question, which is, right, you've got one song. You're on the stage of the Palladium. There's a 40-piece orchestra behind you. What are you singing?
Oh, Lord, you can't do that to me.
I've just done it.
Oh. Oh, Lordy. Oh, my gosh. Okay, right, just randomly feeling good. Nina Simone.
Oh.
It actually was written by Leslie Bricus. And I'm feeling good. I would just do that.
Okay.
Just because it's a fantastic... If you said it was a 40-piece orchestra on the stage, wow, they would sound great. And it's also, I think it's a very good message about saying, just look at the world. Mm-hmm. We're actually okay. I'm feeling good. There you go. random. Brilliant. Just literally pulled that out of my head.
Bonnie,
no,
thank you so much coming in. You've squeezed it in before your show tonight. Right. Go and do the splits like the... can't believe you do that.
It's silly, isn't
but
it?
Thank
it's just
you.
Silly.
It's been lovely to talk to you. It really
and you,
has.
Alice. Thank always. You. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Bonnie Langford, who came into the studio to talk to me. And if you enjoyed that, well, you can rate it online. Download the rest of the series so that you'll get an alert when it comes into your inbox. Anyway, we'll see you next week.
Columbus, it's Jenny and Bill from Simple Bath and Kitchen. Are you thinking about updating your bathroom or kitchen?
Don't call some big out-of-town franchise. We're local, top to bottom, right here in Columbus.
We know our city, we know the homes, and we always treat every project like it's our own.
On time, on budget, zero pressure, so you can actually enjoy your home.
Visit SimpleBathAndKitchen.com today.
We make it simple for you.
That's SimpleBathAndKitchen.com.
SimpleBathAndKitchen.com.
Do you know what people say when they start planning a remodel? They say, I don't even know where to begin.
But that's where we come in. At Simple Bath & Kitchen, design is the fun part.
We walk you through styles, colors, and layouts right in our showroom so you can see your new space come to life.
And once you love the design, our team handles the rest. On time, on budget, and with zero pressure.
Beautiful designs, smooth process.
Visit SimpleBathAndKitchen.com to start your design today.
We make it simple for you.